6. Thank you, Chair. Before we step off Clause 6, Clause 6 starts off by saying that the Board consists of the following voting members appointed by the Minister in writing. Chair, I'm not too sure how we slipped up on that as a department. The LSSA suggested, and if I may just get the document, in its comments, and I think it's only fair that they should be heard on this. The bill provides for the Chief Executive Officer and three employees of Legal Aid South Africa to be appointed as voting members. This is in conflict with good corporate governance. And that wasn't in our response document, and I apologise for that, but I think we owe it to the LSSA to deal with it, and if we may deal with it now. Chair, I'm not, they don't, LSSA doesn't give any motivation, but as far as I'm aware, that is not in conflict with good governance as set out in the King 3 report. And if I may I ask the CEO of Legal Aid South Africa to just give some background on that. But our response would be that it isn't in conflict with good governance.
Ms. Vido.
Chair, yes, I think that I want to confirm that King 3, in fact, doesn't raise any issue about executives not being on the board. In fact, I was explaining to Mr. Bassett that the term managing director comes from the notion that the person who's the CEO actually is a director and is actually managing the organization. So that's where the term MD comes in, and therefore they have always had, and if you look at companies that abide by corporate governance, they always have executives who are part of the board and they have full voting rights. There would be some issues on which they obviously wouldn't be able to be part of, which, for example, their own issues and their own remuneration as an example kind of issues. But then that would be what the board would then ask them to excuse themselves on. Thank you.
Honourable members, any issue with that? Are we happy? Let's proceed. And before we proceed, Mr. Bassett, the committee secretaries have checked. They had not received the document which you sent, but it's not for you to explain, and we can also ask technology. Maybe in future when important documents are sent, if you can ask your staff just to check with the committee secretaries if they have received them.
Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thanks.
Chair, I think that takes care of Clause 6, and if we can move on to Clause 7, that it deals with qualification for membership of the board, and that leads from Clause 6 because it's very closely linked. Chair, there are various options here that we in the department have suggested, and I'll explain as we go along. Qualification for membership of board, what we have done, and that's on page 9 of the document. There again, the words collectively were questioned when we did a briefing on the document, and as we've already explained, maybe it would be appropriate to use what is already in existing legislation. Directors must as a whole be broadly representative of the diversity of the South African population. As a whole have, and we've also used examples in other legislation, which if the committee wants us to, we can go into detail, and Ms. Lowe can help me, have experience in or knowledge of any one or more of the following fields. And then we go through what was in the bill. We've just divided it up into sub-paragraphs: business management, information technology, legal services, and we've inserted including experience as a practicing attorney and advocate, corporate governance, accounting or auditing, community-based knowledge relevant to legal aid, and then, as was discussed in this committee on previous occasions, knowledge in public interest law. I think that's an important insertion. And then there are the paragraphs dealing with the convictions that a potential director might have had. The original one is clause 8 paragraph E. The committee raised the question why this clause, we don't refer to a similar provision in the Constitution. and you will see the alternative option one for wording of paragraph E is the wording that is set out in section 47 of the Constitution. Alternative option two for wording of paragraph E is the wording, similar wording, but a little bit different, that was used in the legal practice bill, and in respect of which there was a lot of debate in this committee. And then a further option on page 11, and that's footnote 21, includes, this is the option which includes the provisions of section 69 of the Companies Act. Honourable members might recall that Legal Aid South Africa suggested that we should incorporate the provisions of section 69 of the Companies Act into this provision. So there are three different options. But then there is possibly, and maybe it's going, maybe there are too many alternatives. The further alternative clause for PC's consideration is a model that was used in the legal practice law as well. And maybe I can take, with that as basis, maybe I can take you through the various options as we go along. And I'm talking about paragraphs E going forward. The first one on page 9, and that's as the bill was introduced into Parliament, and it reads, must not have been committed of theft, fraud, perjury, or an offence under the Anti-Corruption Act, or have been convicted after the commencement of the Constitution of an offence referred to in Schedule 1 to the Criminal Procedure Act. The first alternative, which is based on Section 47 of the Constitution, includes that the person must not have been an unrehabilitated insolvent, must not be anyone who has been declared to be of unsound mind by a court of the Republic, or must not be anyone who is convicted of an offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment without the option of a fine, either in the Republic or outside the Republic, if the conduct constituting the offence would have been an offence in the Republic, but no one may be regarded as having been sentenced until an appeal against against the conviction or sentence has been determined, or until the time for an appeal has expired, provided that a disqualification under this paragraph ends 5 years after the sentence has been completed. Then, in similar vein, the wording that was used in the legal practice bill, must not be an unrehabilitated insolvent, must not be a person who's been declared to be of unsound mind by a court of the Republic, and then on the conviction, or must not be a person who has been convicted in a court of first instance of an offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment without the option of a fine, or of an offence which involves any element of dishonesty, either in the Republic or outside the Republic, if the conduct constituting the offence would have been an offence in the Republic, other than a conviction for an offence committed prior to 27 April 1994 associated with political objectives, provided that if the person in question lodges an appeal against the conviction or sentence, he or she must be suspended from office pending the outcome of the appeal. And then the further alternative, which incorporates Section 69 of the Companies Act, it's also an unrehabilitated insolvent, not be a person declared to be of unsound mind by a court in the Republic, not have been convicted in the Republic or elsewhere and imprisoned without the option of a fine for theft, fraud, forgery, perjury, or an offence involving fraud, misrepresentation, or dishonesty in connection with the promotion, formation, or management of a company, must not have been convicted of an offence under the Companies Act, the Insolvencies Act, the Close Corporations Act, the Competition Act, the Financial Intelligence Act, the Financial Markets Act, or Chapter 2 of the anti-corruption legislation, and must not have been prohibited in terms of any public regulation to be a director of a company, or must not have been removed from an office of trust on the grounds of misconduct involving dishonesty. So the Companies Act option incorporates incorporates basically what is in the constitution option and in the legal practice bill option. But what it does do, and perhaps expediently, is that it deals with people that have been removed as directors of companies, because you don't want a person like that on the board of Legal Aid South Africa. Then the further option, and that really deals with representativity, and we suggested it for the committee's consideration. The directors must, subject to subsection 2, be fit and proper persons, be South African citizens, and not have been convicted of theft, fraud, perjury, or an offence under the Anti-Corruption Act, or have been convicted after the commencement of the Constitution of an offence referred to in Schedule 1 to the Criminal Procedure Act. But then, and subclause 2 deals with representativity, and this is what we had in the legal practice bill, and it reads as follows: when constituting the board, the following factors must, as far as is practicable, be taken into account: the racial and gender composition of South Africa, the objects of Legal Aid South Africa and the board, representation of persons with disabilities, provincial representation, and experience in and knowledge of business management, information technology, the provision of legal services, including experience as a practicing attorney and advocate, or it could be or advocate, corporate governance, accounting or auditing, community-based knowledge relevant to legal aid. Now, those six are what is already contained in the bill. What could be added as further criteria for the committee's consideration is legal education and training, because that might be important, civil and criminal proceedings and the functioning of the courts and tribunals in general, and knowledge in public interest law, which the committee has already spoken about. So those, and maybe there are too many options that we have put up for the committee's consideration, but we thought it might be prudent just to have a look at it. Recently passed legislation in respect of which this committee has deliberated at length.
What is your preference?
Be the last one, because you've got the words "as far as practicable," so it does give rise to some sort of flexibility, and it makes the constituting of the board that I think gives it the flexibility that it needs. It deals with representativity. It deals with more than representativity than our original provision. It deals with people with disabilities. It deals with provincial representation, and I think that's important for a board of this nature. And it includes a few more criteria that I think are relevant to the constitution of this board, and it also takes into account the fit and proper. It deals with being fit and proper and being South African citizens, which the others don't do.
Honorable Judge, what would be your preference?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I agree that the last option seems to be the most preferable one. And I can confirm that even currently, in the current arrangement, we've tried to ensure that all the regions of South Africa, we've got provincial representation here. We've tried to make sure that we have someone on the board who comes from a particular region of the country. Thank you, sir.
Honorable members, what are your preferences? Honorable Mutapo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll also go for this one on page 12, the one the judge has already been referred to, because it can stand the test of constitutionality. However, I also like to seek clarity on Roman figure 7 on legal education and training, if that can just be unpacked. However, I support it as it is. Thank you.
Any other? due. So, Honorable Majaki.
Thank you, Chair. The one challenge is how do you prioritize this? Because it all of these areas exist a number of board members. And for you to actually come up with an ideal board, you don't want to find that really categories that are not of high priority are the ones that are more represented on the board.
I think all we need is clarity on Roman 7, legal aid and training, and the issue that Honorable Majaki is raising. Can we hear you, Mr. Bassett?
Thank you, Chair. I think legal aid and training comes in when you have a look at the objects of the board. It's a new object, and I think it's an important object. One of the objects of the board is to provide education and information concerning legal rights and obligations. That is something new. And I think it's... I would like to think that this committee realizes and does realize the importance of education and information on these issues, and that's why we have included it there. It's a difficult question to answer on the prioritization, but that is why we've included the words "as far as is practicable." I don't know whether I can take it any further than that. The race and gender is number one. It's one that's listed first, but I don't know whether I can take it any further. I don't know whether my colleagues would want to expand on that.
Thank you very much. Could I deal with the question by Honorable Majaki? My experience as chair is that it happens that you find one individual who have a number of these attributes, but one is able to ensure that these attributes are recognized in the board committees. Let me give you the example of the remuneration, the REMCO committee of the board, where you'd have a board member, and some board members belong to that committee, but the board has the power to co-opt specialists, right, into those committees. Because a lot of the success of Legal Aid South Africa today is because of the committee work. The committees of the board do a lot of work, and that's where most of these specialists sit. You do have the general specialists on the board itself who carry the big load of the board, but in the committees, this is very well done with. I mean, the current chair of the auditing, the internal audit committee of the board is a woman who comes with highly corporate governance, accounting, and auditing skills. She sits on the board, but she also chairs that audit committee of the board. So I think it's something that, in my experience, we've been able to take care of and make sure that we don't lose it. Like the legal services committee of the board, that's where you'll find the lawyers, the people with public interest, law, knowledge, community-based legal practice and stuff. Thank you, Chair.
Majaki, are you answered? Thank you very much. Mr. Bassett?
Chair, what this alternative does not have in it, because it really is just a reworking of the Clause 7 as introduced. If the committee is happy with that provision, what would also need to be incorporated into that is the Section 69 of the Companies Act, if the committee is happy with it, in one of the alternatives that isn't there, because that would deal with people that have been prohibited from being members of or directors of companies. So that alternative would also include the Section 69 of the Companies Act, which also has the unrehabilitation. rehabilitated insolvent and not having been declared to be of unsound mind.
Members, you are happy with that? Thank you very much. Well done, Mr. Bassett. Can we move on?
Chair. And then, before I move on, and I'm sorry to be labouring the point, the alternative that the committee seems to like has the original wording as far as conviction of an offence is concerned. But there are two other alternatives. There is the legal practice bill alternative, and then there's the constitution alternative. Maybe if we could get direction of what the committee would prefer. The most recent that has been dealt with at length is the legal practice bill alternative, which is to be found on page 10, the wording used in the legal practice bill. That is of an offence convicted of an offence in a court of the first instance, of an offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment without the option of a fine, or of an offence which involves any element of dishonesty. But it does talk about offences prior to 27 April associated with political objectives, excludes those. So that the committee might want to consider that one, as I say, in the light of its recent deliberation and in the light of its referring specifically to 27 April 1994. We would appreciate the committee's guidance on that.
Thank you, Chair. We'll support the second one, and of an offence which involves elements of dishonesty, and then it also mentioned the period prior to 27 April 1994. And that is also for consistency, because the chin is in the legal aid practice, legal practice bill.
Honourable Majake speaking for all of us, including Honourable Swart Gafar. Okay. Thank you very much. Proceed, Mr. Bas.
If we may move to Clause 8. I see there's a footnote 25. This is about the appointment of the deputy chairperson. When we met last Friday, the committee didn't give us any final instruction whether the minister should appoint the deputy chair or not. We did indicate when we did a comparison with other legislation that the minister does appoint the deputy chairperson in most cases. And if I remember correctly, you, Chair, indicated that you would like to sleep on the matter and discuss it further, possibly today.
Judge is appointed by the minister, and the judge appoints the chairperson, and what problem can there be when the minister appoints the deputy chairperson, which is even direct, unless we want to, I don't know, what are the members saying? Also, just bear in mind that this ministers also carry a mandate, broader mandate from society. They appoint even the chief justice and so on. So I don't think we should have difficulty with that. Can we leave it at that? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Then we move on to Clause 9. That deals with term of appointment, and the issue here in respect of which the committee must make a final decision is the bill as it is only allows for members to be appointed for one additional term. The appointment of the directors is for a period not less than 3 years and not more than 5 years, determined by the minister in writing at the time of appointment, and may be reappointed for one additional term only, which means that board members can serve for not longer than 10 years. And the question is whether there should be that restriction or whether it should be left open.
Actually, there's only one member who took the view that he should be open-ended. The other members, for me, supported the limitation to 10. I don't know, unless if they have slept over the matter and changed their minds. What is the position today? Honorable Majaki.
The position is still the same, Chair. Thanks.
We should go that route, the limitation to 2 terms. That makes space for bringing new blood, and also, you know, if you have a deputy chairperson and we have a chairperson who can be there for life, it means some people must be deputies for life. It's not good democracy. So we accept the limitation of the term. Proceed, Mr. Basson.
Thank you, Chair. Then we move on to termination of membership of the board. Just a few technical, we've inserted a new paragraph D. A director ceases to be a director of the board when his or her term of office as director expires. I think the committee accepted the proposal of Legal Aid South Africa in that regard, and the rest are really technical in nature. And then what has also been inserted is a new proposed subclause 3, and that arises from discussions when the department briefed the committee on the 29th of July that a process for the removal of a director by the minister be inserted. And this is what we are suggesting: the inclusion of subclause 3, which reads as follows: before removing a person from office in terms of subsection 2, the minister must afford the person an opportunity to be heard. And in the accompanying document that was submitted, we did a comparison of other legislation, and this is in line with what we have seen, the wording that we have seen in other legislation.
That's a dictate of natural justice, that before you judge people, you must listen to them. So we can have anyone who would have a problem with natural justice. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. There was nothing under their chair. 12, there was nothing. On committees of board, clause 13, the Commission on Gender Equality stressed that when constituting committees, representativity needs to be taken into account. And with that in mind, we've developed a proposed new subclause 3, which reads as follows: when constituting a committee, the following factors must, as far as is practicable, be taken into account: the racial and gender composition of South Africa, the objects of the committee in question, and the representation of persons with, it should be persons with disabilities. And that's for the committee's consideration.
We are happy with that. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. On clause 14, dealing with delegation of powers and assignments of duties, clause 14.1 reads: subject to the provisions of the PFMA, the board may in writing delegate any of its powers or assign any of its duties or functions imposed on or assigned to it to any director, committee, employee or agent of Legal Aid South Africa. And we didn't discuss, it was discussed on the 29th of July at the briefing. The question was raised whether the board should only delegate to the CEO to avoid tensions and possible confusion. And we did a search and had a look at other legislation, and it would appear, and Ms. Lowe can take us through that, other legislation delegations are two persons other than the CEO, for instance, two employees. But we haven't really discussed this again since the 29th of July. We're just placing on the table what we found in other legislation, so that is up for consideration and possible deliberations by the committee.
I heard the Honourable Judge saying that lots of work happens in committees. Now, I fail to understand why should delegation be limited to an individual, and then that individual then must delegate further. Is delegation by the collective not better than delegation by an individual? What are members saying?
Ms. Lowe, she's going to take us through the remainder of the bill.
Thank you, Chair. Chapter 3 deals with the performance of administrative work of Legal Aid South Africa. In Clause 15, if you look at footnote 31, it was proposed that Clauses 15 and 16 be swapped around. This was on the meeting of 29 July. It was then proposed. This is for the committee's consideration.
Swap around, what else do we have to decide on?
Chair, I can't recall who made that suggestion, but we would suggest that it stays the same. You deal with the appointment first and then you deal with the functions. That's the way we normally do it.
Thank you, Chair. Then in Clause 15.2, it provides that the CEO holds office for an agreed term not exceeding 5 years, which may be renewed. There's not a limit on the number of renewals. And there was some comment in this respect. We would appreciate the committee's instruction in this regard, please. Chairperson, if I could just say that if you look at other acts, in many of the acts, the CEO is, in all of them, the CEO is appointed for a specific term. In many, the other acts, it is left open how many times the CEO can be re-elected or renewable, reappointed. It is not very often that it is a limited, if you look at other acts, but this is left to the committee for consideration.
Open to removal if there are problems.
We, as a department, this is possibly different to the board itself, and we would suggest that it be remain the same as the bill was introduced into Parliament, so that there is no limitation, bearing in mind the shortage of skills and that sort of thing. We need to possibly bear that in mind as well.
Honourable members, honourable members agree. We agree with that. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 16, there was nothing. Then in Chapter 4, Clause 17 deals with employees and agents of Legal Aid South Africa. Clause 17.1, there's an insertion proposed to provide that the CEO must, subject to subsections 3 and Section 18. in C that is newly inserted, designate certain officials as agents in conjunction with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We discussed this earlier today. That is because of the position that agents are actually employees of DOJ. So this was actually just a technical mistake, actually, in the bill as it was introduced, and this is rectified here.
So you are saying that that designation must still happen in conjunction with the department?
Chair, that is correct. As the bill was introduced, it provided that the CO appoints agents, which isn't de facto, it doesn't work like that. So it was actually a mistake.
Are we happy with the formulation? Thank you. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then in Clause 17 still, subsection, subclause 3, this is a new insertion. After the Commission of Gender Equality's comments, and it provides that when appointing employees and designating agents as contemplated in subsection 1, the following factors must, as far as practicable, be taken into account: racial and gender composition, objects of Legal Aid South Africa and the board, and representation of persons with disabilities.
I think this speaks for itself. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Clauses 18 and 19, there was nothing. 2021, we are in Chapter 5, General, Clause 22.1b. There is a change in wording proposed. The clause reads, 22.1, a court in criminal proceedings may only direct that a person be provided with legal representation at state expense if the court has, B, subject to subsection 3, refer the matter together with any report the court may consider necessary for the attention of Legal Aid South Africa. For evaluation and report by Legal Aid South Africa, and Legal Aid South Africa has made a recommendation. And the wording was that, but the GCB commented that it would be better to change the word to whether the person concerned qualifies. Otherwise, the impression is created that a decision was already taken, that he will receive legal aid, but then it's again referred to the court. So this is only a technical amendment that we propose.
Is it that you replace that with whether? But now, shouldn't it be recommendation whether or not?
Yes, Chair, we can put that in.
Okay. Are we in agreement, members? Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then in subclause 2, it is only a technical amendment. 24, section 24 is changed to 23 because of the swapping of those two clauses. And yes, again then in subclause 4b, the same, it was accepted earlier by the committee that those two should be swapped. So that is only technical. And then again, similarly, on page 23, the whole clause 23 is taken out and put in after 24. This is just a swapping of the two clauses as was agreed to earlier. Then in the new clause 23, on page 25, subclause 2, it is an insertion that regulations must, before publication in the Gazette, be tabled in Parliament by the Minister for approval. the committee last week indicated that the regulations should be approved by Parliament, bearing in mind that the regulations will determine the matters which qualify for legal aid in the broad sense and those matters that don't qualify.
Okay, proceed, Mr. Bassett.
I may chip in here. The question was raised. I think it's important for Parliament, as this committee has agreed to, that it's for approval, because these are such crucial issues to put in regulations to decide what will qualify for legal aid and what will not. But the question was raised, outside the committee, won't this have an effect of delaying important considerations if the regulations are progressive and increase legal aid, or what qualifies for legal aid? Would it be necessary to get parliamentary approval for that? My response was, I can't recall in similar legislation where it is for parliamentary approval how you can divide what goes for approval and what shouldn't. But I do want to just raise the concern that was registered about a provision of this nature. It might take a bit longer to get those regulations in operation if they are subject to parliamentary approval. But I have a difficulty in coming up with a solution to what to that problem. I can't recall ever having dealt with something along in that of that nature.
The approval not include the ratification. That you formulate them, you put them into practice, subject to approval or ratification by Parliament.
Chair, what we've normally done, and possibly that is a solution, is that they don't come into operation until Parliament has approved them. It would be difficult to, thinking again, to put them into operation and then have them subject to ratification. What happens if there are problems with the regulations after they've come into effect that they would have to be changed? I can't recall having dealt with anything like that. That might give rise to a problem, and there might be vested rights. People might have made decisions on the basis of the regulations that are found not to have been ratified.
You know, in my view, there shouldn't be a problem when the regulations are not subject to parliamentary approval. But you know, South African democracy is so dynamic that a minister will make regulations, implement them. Some people will say, no, these regulations are advancing party political aims and things like that. I think saying that Parliament should approve would actually be a check and balance so that no party thinks that these regulations are serving party political interests. But it's up to this committee to guide us. Mrs. Vidu?
Chairperson, I think the issue of approval, I don't have a problem. I'm not commenting on that. I just wanted to look at the scenario, and that is what I was explaining to Mr. Bassett, that what we have had in legal aid is that because of the budgetary constraints, we haven't always been able to provide legal aid on all matters. So we have excluded specific matters, especially as an example, certain kinds of civil matters. Then what happens is that, like you said, in terms of the Bill of Rights, it says about a progressive realization of those rights. So as the budgetary scenario improves, then one can add on more things which we can provide legal aid for, which means those that were excluded in the past can now be included. So the only question was that because of this process being prolonged, is it possible to sort of implement that, because it's going to impact positively on communities while the process is unfolding? And I think that's where the issue arose, because currently in the legal aid guide, the way it works is that we have a guide which has to go to the minister, but in the interim between the guides being approved, if the Board of Legal Aid South Africa approves certain policy changes, then we can begin to implement them subject to the minister approving it. So that while he's still going to consider it, we can implement it, especially if it's going to be a positive impact on the community, then the minister still has final say. So then let's say the minister decides, no, we don't want that, then we can still take it out. But it would have meant that for a short period, we might have benefited some people. It hasn't happened where the minister has disagreed in the past, but I'm just using that as an example in terms of raising the issue of is there a way in which we could accommodate that improvement in the realization of rights by communities? Thank you, Chair.
My judge.
Thanks, CEO. I think you've answered yourself. Whether the document is being amended or still being drafted, it will continue to work until advised otherwise. So the work of the Legal Aid South Africa wouldn't actually stop. But what is important is to bring the regulations to Parliament so that they can then therefore be approved by Parliament.
Mrs. Vidu, are you on the same page?
I think that what I was saying is that in the expansion, I don't have a problem that the work will always continue as per the existing regulations at any point in time. I was just commenting on the expansion part. I think if one is going the opposite, for example, reducing, I think it's very important to come to Parliament before we reduce, because then Parliament and the Minister must know, because if they had approved it, they must know if it's taken out. It was only in the expansion. But if it can't be done, it can't be done. It will have to wait. But I was raising it with Mr. Bassett from a point of view of in the interest of expanding the community's access to certain kinds of legal aid services. Thank you, Chair.
What is the general practice with regulations? Are they all subject to approval by Parliament?
Chair, no. And it's very difficult. We've in the past, the same question has been asked of us, and we've had a look at it. And I think even the textbooks on this issue say that there's no trend. Some regulations are approved by Parliament and some are not. So it's very difficult to say what the trend is and what is prudent and what isn't. And my experience in this committee in the past has been have a look at the issue in question and the importance thereof and take a decision based on that, and that's the way this committee has worked in the past. And on issues of this nature that we are dealing with, past experience has shown that the committee or Parliament has an interest in ensuring that the right thing is done and that they have oversight over issues of this nature.
Honourable Majak, do we actually want to bureaucratize this matter? It must go to the Minister for approval, it must go to Parliament for approval. Is that because we have to oversee? Wouldn't it have the consequences that Honourable Mrs. Fedu is fearing? Honourable Bonga?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think the question before us would be, what status does the regulation have? So in this case, the answer would be, regulations have the same standing as the legislation. Then therefore, we will be required that as an oversight body of government, you need to make sure that those regulations get that approval from the committee.
Mr. Bassett himself said regulations are the same status as the legislation. There's another argument, Mr. Majak.
Can we deal with amendment of these regulations at the same time with this that we're dealing with now? The whole issue of regulations being approved and what happens to amendments, because we have actually also engaged at that level as to how amendments are made. Will they have to be approved and things like that?
Well, Judge, do you want to say something about approval or non-approval before we proceed?
Chair, I was hoping to stay out of this one. But I would be happy with them being approved. I think they play a very important, critical role in what we do. So I don't have a problem with the approval. But
I think that can also help to take you out of the political controversies. Because we don't want people to use legal aid as a political, a terrain of political struggle. Can we leave it that way, that they will be subject to approval? Let's take that and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The only one left is a subclause 4 in this clause that we are busy with, that we as a department inserted for the committee's consideration in an attempt to assist the committee in this respect, Parliament's involvement with the regulations and the policy of legal aid. And what we suggested, but I think it falls away now that the decision has been taken, is that in the annual report, Legal Aid South Africa must report on these matters specifically so that Parliament can then decide whether it wants to take steps. But it's either the one or the other, and the committee has decided on the approval road, so I suppose this one falls away then.
So what are you saying? What direction are you recommending?
Person, we suggested this subclause 4 as an almost an option if the committee didn't feel that the regulations should be approved by Parliament, that Legal Aid South Africa could be required to report on this annually. But I think, as I understand it, the committee decided that the regulations must be approved by Parliament. Then this option that we just inserted will fall away then.
Okay. No, there's agreement with you. So where are we, Mr. Bassett?
Yeah, that brings us to the end of the clause-by-clause deliberations, and we've taken note of the recommendations and instructions of the committee, and we would need to go and give effect to those and come up with an A version of the bill, as you said right at the beginning.
See, lawyers use the word instruct. We were not instructing you, we were deliberating, we reached consensus on all the issues. So we hope that your final version will be available tomorrow. So we meet again here tomorrow. Where? Yeah. We meet at 9 o'clock in M315. M315 is Max Building. Okay. Let me thank.
Just to take you back a little, Chair, and I'm doing this because the Judge President is here. There was a question that was asked last week about the type of cases that you actually handle, especially when it comes to civil matters, and we didn't really get the answer. I don't know whether that answer is available now, and I'm taking it now. We even have full capacity to deal with the answer now.
Mrs. Vidu?
Chair, I thought we did respond, and we said that we, in civil matters, we do all matters except those that are specifically excluded in the legal aid guide, and the types of matters we do, and in our annual report, we report on it, the different types of matters. We do family matters, which includes divorces and assistance in other family-related issues. We also do housing matters, which includes ESTA and PI matters, and including labor tenancy matters also in rural areas, etc. We then also do matters related to labor in the labor courts, and then we do other general matters. The one example of what we specifically exclude is those matters sounding in money, where if there is a chance that somebody can claim for money, which can then be done by a private practitioner through a contingency fee basis, we don't get involved in that so that it allows private practitioners to actually do that in terms of that relevant legislation on contingency fees. So I think that was what we had clarified. I'm not sure if there's anything further we can provide. The actual details of proportions, we will have it available soon when we submit our annual report.
Maybe the issue there is the legal guide, aid guide, doesn't have the same status as regulations. And therefore, Parliament as an oversight body has no authority over what you include or exclude. Maybe that could be what Ms. Majake's problem is, that there would be people out there who are not happy with the exclusion or inclusion, and how do we make sure that whatever you do takes into account the concerns of communities.
Thanks, Chair, you've covered me. But also I take it like the guide will then therefore be in the position to cover issues of this nature as to how they are handled.
Chairperson, if I may. Yes, the guide clarifies that, and the guide, although it's not approved by Parliament, it's ratified, it is approved by the Minister. So the Minister has the final say, and if he thinks that we must include or exclude anything, then it also, that is where we engage. Generally, the legal aid guide, as I had explained, is meant to be revised and reviewed annually, and the Board of Legal Aid South Africa considers it and then submits that to the Minister. And when the Minister then considers it, we then engage and have meetings with the Minister, and then he asks us the same questions that you're asking us, clarifying certain things, looking at why we're doing this or not. For example, the issues of the means test. A lot of the policy issues are included in the legal aid guide, the same ones that will in future be in the regulations, which will then come to Parliament for approval, are included there, but also included are procedures, which procedures will now be separated out into the legal aid manual. And you correct, Chairperson, is that they have no status of legislation, and that's why we tried to change it, because sometimes courts have felt that then they're not bound by those.
Dr. Majake, are you happy?
I'm happy, sir. Chairperson, thanks.
I think at the moment we have no evidence that there's any problem. And I guess if we can in future work as we have done in relation to the bill, even to the point of having the judge here, I think we won't have problems. I think let's just work together. That's why I want to send special words of thanks to the judge for having been here, because we would sit here as a committee and talk. But, the resolution of some of these matters requires practical experience, and your experience and insights were very helpful in this work. We thank you very much. And honorable members, thank you for your attendance and contributions. We'll see you tomorrow in M315 at 9 o'clock.